So we have this recording on. All right, so now we have both recorders going, so anything you say will be recorded. And we've got the mic on.
They used against me in a court of law. Abby.
Just to let you know. So I'm going to read a biographical sketch for the users. My name is Abigail Delph, a service learning assistant with the Department of History at Indiana University, Purdue University. Today is May 26th, 2016, and I am interviewing Mr. Richard Hester at the Indiana Business Advisors Office in Indianapolis, Indiana. This interview is part of an oral history project to celebrate the Red Cross of Indiana's 100th anniversary. For this project, we are interviewing people who volunteered or worked for, donated to, or were helped by the Red Cross of Indiana. Dr. Philip Scarpino, the director of the Public History Program at Indiana University, Purdue University, is the project supervisor. Mr. Richard Hester graduated from Cardinal Ritter High School in 1972. He went on to pursue a Bachelor of Science degree from Ball State University and graduated in 1977. From 1977 to 1981, Mr. Hester worked as an assistant to the president for the Standard Life Insurance Company of Indiana. In 1981, Mr. Hester started Indiana Business Brokers Resource Incorporated with his partner, Larry Metzing. In early 1998, Indiana Business Brokers acquired Wolf Business Resource Corporation and changed the name to Indiana Business Resource, Inc. In 2005, Sunbelt Business Advisors and Mr. Hester's business merged to form Indiana's largest and most experienced business intermediary with over 30 years' experience. In 2013, Mr. Hester's company underwent a major rebrand and is now called Indiana Business Advisors. A unique and essential aspect of Mr. Hester is his volunteer work with the community. He has served as either the chairman of the board or on a member of the board of the following organizations: Sigma Chi International Fraternity, American Red Cross, United Way of Central Indiana, Hispanic Education Center, Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce, Indianapolis Athletic Club, Leadership Ventures, and is a graduate of the Distinguished Stanley K. Lacey Executive Leadership Series and past chair of its alumni group. Mr. Hester, before we start, I'd like to ask your permission to record the interview, to transcribe the recording if funding becomes available, and to place the recording and transcriptions, if we make them, in the IEPUI archives and special collections, as well as the American Red Cross of Indiana for the use of their patrons.
Absolutely.
All right, thank you. Let's get started.
Thank you for that very nice introduction there. I mean, my mother would love that.
No problem. You're a very accomplished person, so it was really easy.
You're kind.
But I'm going to start off by asking you some general questions about yourself to get us into the interview. So where were you born?
Right here in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Right here? All right.
I'm a native Hoosier.
When were you born? What was your birthday?
May 27th. It's my birthday is tomorrow.
Oh, so happy early birthday.
In 1954.
All right then. So what were your parents' names?
Joe and Helen Hester.
Joe and Helen Hester. All right. Did you have any brothers or sisters?
I do. A younger brother, Don, and a younger sister, Polly.
All right. And where are you in that mix? Are you the oldest?
I am the oldest.
Oldest? Oh, okay.
I am the oldest.
I understand your pain of being the oldest. What were your parents' occupations?
My father worked his entire career for General Motors, particularly here with Allison. Mm-hmm. In Indianapolis. We always joked when I was growing up, my dad worked at Allison. We lived on Allison Avenue, and I went to Allison Kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody thought I was a stutterer or had very limited vocabulary because my answer to everything was Allison.
And Allison, just for the sake of the listeners, was that a person and based on the name, or was it a town?
No, Allison is a large manufacturer here in town.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Allison Gas Turbine, and they've gone through a couple ownership changes over the years, but a large employer in town, and over the years has been very generous to our community in many fundraising activities. Mm-hmm. So it has a great history with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which is probably another whole topic that we don't want to get into, but they have a great history with the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Of course, mm-hmm. So has Red Cross had a history mm-hmm. with the Motor Speedway and the Indy Racing League.
Okay.
My mom, we were blessed that she was able to be home with us full time when we were young. Mm-hmm. But then when we got to be older, she worked what was then Gufco, which was a large retail store, and she was what was called a comparative shopper. So she would go to other stores and compare prices, that type of thing. It was a fun job for her.
With the Motor Speedway relationship with the Red Cross, can you describe that relationship, how the Red Cross's relationship was with Motor Speedway?
Sure. For years, Tony George was active with the Red Cross, and then Hugh Baker, who's was a longtime Red Cross volunteer who just left this world for the next about a year ago, and we miss him dearly, but he was very active with automobile racing, the Motor Speedway, and the Indy Racing League. So we developed a relationship between the Red Cross here in Indianapolis and the Motor Speedway and the IRL. At one point in time, anytime a fine was given to a driver, that money went to the Red Cross for us to use for mission purposes.
Oh, wow.
At one point in time, we actually had a Red Cross car in the race. I mean, we didn't pay any money for it, but they put our logo on it and sponsored it. I still have pictures of that car, which is kind of fun. The national organization decided perhaps we shouldn't have the big logo on the car in case it wrecked, because it wouldn't look very good.
So hey, that's what the Red Cross is here for.
we deal with disasters every day, you know, and we're certainly visible around the track in many sporting activities throughout the state of Indiana. But that was kind of a fun. So many of us still have pictures of that car, even though it didn't race in the race per se, but it was on the track. And
what year was that?
It was kind of fun. Oh, that I don't really recall, but I have it written on the back of the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's an oral history, I'll get you a copy of the picture just for fun if you'd like one.
Oh, yeah. I will follow up with you on that then. Yeah. That sounds really cool. What were your... where did you go to high school? Oh, wait, I actually asked that in your introduction, but...
I went to Cardinal Ritter High School on the west side of town. I was born on the west side. I was actually born in Speedway.
Mm-hmm.
And raised on the west side of town, went to Cardinal Ritter High School.
Did you get involved in volunteering in high school?
I did. Mm-hmm. I was active in volunteering in high school. A lot of that came from my parents. My parents were also very involved in the community. They did a lot of volunteer work. And my brother and sister and I kind of learned from them that that's really an obligation that we believe every citizen has,
mm-hmm.
you know, to give back to the community and make a difference in the community, and particularly in the lives of individuals who may have some challenges or struggling or less fortunate than we are, at least at this point in time in their lives.
Was there an early childhood memory you had of the passion to get involved in volunteer work?
Well, I remember a lot of childhood memories where mom and dad would, we might be going down to a soup kitchen and helping, but we would not do it on Thanksgiving because everybody did it on Thanksgiving, so mom and dad thought it was important that we did it other times during the year. Remember, they were also active in politics from the standpoint of making sure people registered to vote,
mm-hmm.
and would go, they would drag us along as they went door to door to make sure all the neighbors were registered.
Wow. Do you remember your first volunteer event that you partook in?
Yeah, the first real volunteer event. One of them that always comes to mind is with the American Red Cross. I was in fourth grade, and someone came to our grade school for Red Cross and explained Red Cross to us, and we got involved in some very childish kind of activities, mm-hmm. you know, where there was, I think we made little nut cups and stuff that they were going to deliver to people after a fire or something along those lines. But I just remember being very taken by the Red Cross and the way she explained what the Red Cross did, and we got these little tin pins that you would fold over on your pocket of your shirt. And I was so proud of that little tin pin, although I do remember my mother was a little concerned that it kept putting holes in my shirt because it was a little tin pin.
And I remember from our pre-interview, you talked about getting that same tin pin. Somebody from the Red Cross visited your fourth grade class.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that?
Well, that's what I was just trying to talk about a little bit. I can't even, like I said, I'm trying to remember the actual project. It was something that was, now doesn't seem all that significant, but I remember she explained this is significant in the lives of somebody that had a fire or displaced and they need these comfort items. So it was just a fun little project to do, but I was just taken with the Red Cross, with her description of the mission of the Red Cross, and I love that little tin pin.
Was that outside of school, or did you do that in school?
No, we actually did it in class.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was part
of
it.
Wow, so that was the moment that you knew you wanted to stay involved in the organization? Or?
Not really. Okay. The moment I knew I wanted to stay involved was in college. I was a junior at Ball State, and we'd had it was a pretty traumatic snowstorm of snow and ice because the university was closed and for several days. And I got a call from, I'll never forget her name, Nancy Reichert. She was chairman of volunteers for the American Red Cross Muncie area chapter. And I was fortunate enough to be president of our fraternity. And there had just been an article in the Muncie paper talking about our fraternity winning an award for philanthropics and charitable contributions. So she called and said, you're the fraternity that helps other people, right? I just read about you in the paper. I said, absolutely. And she said, I'm with the Red Cross. And it was immediately, I felt this great sense of pride. I remembered that fourth grade tin pin. And I said, what do you need? You know, we'll do anything that you need. Mm-hmm. And what we did was, a lot of elderly people and handicapped people in the Muncie community, their pipes had frozen, and they had no water, so they couldn't wash dishes, they couldn't flush their toilets, they couldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. So we got to wear these really cool Red Cross helmets and drive a big Red Cross truck around Muncie, and we delivered water to so many people in the community. The other fun thing about that was, and I still have pictures, I mean, you can imagine a bunch of college guys taking pictures of ourselves out in front of the Red Cross truck with our hats on and some of the clients that we met. But what was so fun is we developed relationships with a lot of those folks in the community, and we end up cutting their grass in the summer and doing other things for them. So it was just a really wonderful experience.
So that was the kind of opening the door of you getting officially involved with the Red Cross, was in college.
That's when I knew this was a calling, something I was supposed to do. And the same lady, Nancy Reichert then, because I graduated the next year, was on an Indiana statewide committee for what was called the Youth Leadership Development Center, mm-hmm. or LDC. And it was in its infancy, and they were looking for a younger person to be on that that committee and actually chair it, because they wanted somebody younger, since we were dealing with students that were like 13 to 17 years old. So she recruited me, and I became chairman of that committee and served in that capacity for 20 years as chairman of the Leadership Development Center.
So chairman of the Youth Leadership Development Center? Mm-hmm. All right, and then what we're gonna do now is I'm going to ask you some general questions. You've already covered some of the topics about your involvement in community service, and then transition to more specific questions on the Red Cross. So first I want to talk about your involvement with the Sigma Chi International Fraternity. You said at the pre-interview that you were involved in this fraternity while you were in college at Ball State. And my question is, for the benefit of the users of the interview, could you please explain the mission and purpose of Sigma Chi International Fraternity?
Sure, I'm happy to do that. The mission of the fraternity is to become the preeminent collegiate leadership development organization. Mm-hmm. Aligned, focused, and living our core values. Although we are a social fraternity, our focus has always been on value-based leadership. And as an alumnus, that's how I've remained involved with the fraternity over the years.
Okay. And then what forms of community service did you partake in while a part of Sigma Chi?
As an undergraduate or as an alumnus?
As an undergrad, yeah.
Okay. As an undergraduate, you know, we just did a lot of community volunteer work. And it was everything from, like, delivering water at the Red Cross to helping build a home for someone who was homeless, mm-hmm. Raising money for a variety of different charities, not only from Sigma Chi standpoint, but from other Greek organizations that we would assist, as they would assist us.
So you were involved with other nonprofit organizations, and Red Cross was also one of them. That was how you fulfilled mm-hmm. your purpose? Okay. And then what was there a pivotal moment when you realized you wanted to continue being involved in community service past college? I know you've kind of touched on this a little bit.
You know, I just always knew that that's what I was mm-hmm. supposed to do.
Okay.
You know, so I continued to be very involved in my fraternity. Mm-hmm. Was fortunate to serve as international president of the fraternity in the mid-90s for a couple years. And to this day, I'm still chairman of Horizons, which is our premier value-based leadership development experience for undergraduates.
Mm-hmm. And then you served as president for your fraternity. What responsibilities did you have as president?
Was an undergraduate, when I served as president of the chapter, my responsibilities were obviously for our chapter of approximately 100 men,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to make sure that we fulfilled the mission, that we were active members of the Ball State community and as well as the Muncie community, that we always did well in grades, hopefully well in athletics at the same time, but to make sure that we were truly contributing to the community, because that's what we were supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
As an alumnus, when I was international president of the fraternity, my job was to obviously lead the board of directors when it came to establishing policies and procedures for our over 240 chapters and undergraduate chapters. And we had, at that time, probably 200,000 living alumni. So to make sure that we were all continuing to give back and making the world a better place, because that's what we're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what were the years that you served as the international president of the fraternity?
1995 to 1997.
Okay, and then did the opportunity of serving as president for Sigma Chi prepare you for the numerous leadership positions you held after graduation?
Most definitely. My involvement with Sigma Chi, and I was involved in other activities and organizations on the college campus, too, in addition to Sigma Chi.
Oh, what other organizations?
Oh, my goodness. I was involved in student government. I was involved in a group that was called Cardinal Corps,
mm-hmm.
which is like the official host and hostesses of the university. I was involved with Blue Key, University Senate. So I just had an that was one of the great things about mm-hmm. Ball State. I had a lot of opportunities to be involved, which I think every student should take advantage of every opportunity to be involved, whatever university they attend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can develop leadership skills and communication skills and things that will help you throughout life in the nonprofit sector as well as the for-profit sector.
Mm-hmm. And then I know that you've been talking about how community service has always been important to you and your family throughout your childhood even, but would it be fair to conclude that your dedication to community work began while you were in college, or would you say it occurred before that?
I think the groundwork was laid when I was a child, from, like most of the groundwork for children comes mm-hmm. from their parents, you know, so I understood those values and that responsibility. But it's certainly in high school and college, being able to volunteer
mm-hmm.
On my own certainly solidified that you might be doing good for somebody else, but at the same time you get a lot of self-worth, you know, by doing it. So it's almost selfish volunteerism,
mm-hmm.
you know, because you're doing something good for somebody else, but you get as much out of it, if not more, by doing it. So I'm okay with selfish volunteerism.
So you got involved in the Red Cross while you were in college, and you touched on this a little bit, but for the sake of the listeners, I want you to elaborate more on it. What were some of the first community activities you partook in when you got involved in the Red Cross as a person in college?
Well, the only activity with Red Cross was between that junior and senior year, when we were delivering the water
mm-hmm.
to the elderly and handicapped folks. That was really about the only Red Cross connection in college. But then because of Nancy being on that statewide committee and recruiting me to come in and work with the Leadership Development Center, that's what kind of hooked me on Red Cross. And then from that, I was asked to be, what was at the time, like a youth member of the board of directors, since I'd just been out of college for a year.
So what was the year you were recruited to join the Red Cross after you graduated?
1977. I mean, within months after my graduation.
All right. And you transitioned from serving as president of Sigma Chi after graduating from Ball State in 1977 to volunteering in the Red Cross. Why did you continue after graduation to volunteer for the Red Cross specifically?
The mission. It's all about the mission. We make a difference in the lives of other people. We're there in times of disasters, and at the same time, we try to help prevent disasters.
Mm-hmm.
We try to and I'm talking about natural disasters, but also personal disasters with our education classes, whether it be CPR, first aid, swimming lessons, I mean, you name it. I mean, that whether it be a natural or personal disaster, that's one of the things that we do. Mm-hmm. The other thing that always attracted me to Red Cross, particularly here in Indiana, is if there was a need in the community, there was a void, and we could fill it, we did. I think back to the mayor's office. This was back in probably the early to mid-90s, was worried about infant mortality rates, particularly with lower-income women and the working poor women trying to get prenatal care. So they had a program to make sure the women got the prenatal care. It was then Wishard, but now Eskenazi Hospital. But the funding ran out, and the mayor's office came to the Red Cross and said, this is such an important program, we're trying to move the needle, but we don't have the funding to continue this transportation. And I remember I was chairman of the board of the Red Cross at that time, and we kind of looked at each other and said, well, we got a fleet of vehicles out here that we use mainly in times of disaster, and they just sit there. And we always hope we don't have to use them, because that means there's a disaster. So why couldn't we work with the city of Indianapolis, pick up this program, and we have a transportation department, and for years and years we participated in this, we ran this program basically, and would make sure that women would get the prenatal care they need.
And what's this program called again?
At the time it was the mayor's office, Healthy Baby Express is what the mayor's program named it. We never really used the title, mm-hmm. other than it was in our transportation department.
All right, and then let's see here. Were the volunteer opportunities in the Red Cross similar to the volunteer opportunities you as a member and president of Sigma Chi partook in, or were they different?
You know, they were different because the missions are different. Mm-hmm. Although Sigma Chi did a lot, and we continue to do a lot of community service, and that's part of our values. The mission of the fraternity is really on producing value-based leaders. Mm-hmm. So that's how they're connected, the two missions. So if we produce value-based leaders, and then they get involved in organizations like Red Cross,
okay.
to utilize those skills to, again, hopefully make a difference in the lives of individuals and ultimately a difference in the world.
So complementing one another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then were there differences between being a college student volunteer and a post-grad volunteer?
Sure. There's a lot of differences in the opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
As a post-college grad volunteer, there's more, like with the Red Cross, you got different avenues. I mean, you can be a leadership volunteer, like being on the board and serving, and you also have a direct service opportunity to be involved. What I've always loved about our chapter here in Indiana is that most of our leadership volunteers are also involved in direct service. You know, and again, that's a reflection on the mission and the type of people that we attract to the Red Cross.
Mm-hmm. And what types of direct service? Can you elaborate on that?
You know, many of our volunteers, like myself, I was involved with the Youth Leadership Center for 20 years, where we would actually plan throughout the year, and then we'd go up and have a week-long leadership camp up in northern Indiana, mm-hmm. with students. Volunteer driving, you know, where like I just mentioned, for the prenatal care program that we were involved with. Becoming a instructor in one of our health and safety educational courses that we have. Becoming a disaster volunteer, you know, being trained for that. That's one of the things I look forward to when my wife and I retire, that we could actually become trained for disaster volunteers, because many times they're gone for weeks or months.
Mm-hmm.
Other parts of the country helping out, and you know, obviously when you're working full time you can't do that, but we're looking forward to that opportunity.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
In the future. Yeah.
So now that I've asked some general questions about your beginning involvement with the Red Cross, I'm going to transition a bit and ask more questions about positions you held, work you accomplished, and people who you may have known or who volunteered beside you. So I've looked over your resume, and it's very impressive.
I better check that out myself. I haven't looked at it in a long time. So,
including business development and volunteer activity, that's what it includes on your resume. I will remind users of the interview that I summarized your business career in the introduction. Do you see any parallels or connections between the development of your career in business and your lifelong dedication to volunteer work?
Sure. Whether I don't care what kind of business you're in, we're all in the people business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all about serving people and helping them accomplish their objectives. Well, it's pretty much what we do in the nonprofit sector, although I hate that term.
Mm-hmm. You hate nonprofit?
I just hate the term mm-hmm. because nonprofit sounds like you're supposed to lose money and be inefficient. Nonprofit. I mean, that's really not what we are. We're,
mm-hmm.
if I had my way, we would change the terminology to community profit sector, because the community profits by our existence. You know, so, but I do see the parallel
mm-hmm.
Because in the community profit sector, I will use that most of the time, just because that's what I naturally use.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
are there other people you know that share that same philosophy?
Oh, I've shared that with a lot of my fellow leadership volunteers
mm-hmm.
throughout the community, and everybody seems to embrace the concept,
mm-hmm.
even if they don't embrace the specific words, you know, that's really what we do in the community. But again, serving people and helping them accomplish their objectives and meeting their needs, that's what we do in the community profit sector, as well as we do in our business development sector.
And then, do you think that your success in business opened doors for you as a volunteer, especially your service on a number of board of directors?
It's a good question. Possibly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that but one of the things I love about Indiana is if you want to volunteer, and it could be with the Red Cross, it could be with United Way, it could be you name one of the organizations in the community profit sector, you can. You have that opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's not like that in all parts of the country, because I've talked to friends of mine in other parts of the country. Boy, it's hard for them to get involved, you know, whether it be in a direct service or a leadership position, where it's not that way in Indiana.
Why do you think it's harder for them to get involved in other states?
You know, I just talked to some other folks, maybe because it's a more competitive environment, maybe because it's a little bit more closed environment,
mm-hmm.
But it's just certainly not that way in Indiana, never has been.
Okay.
If you want to be involved, make a difference, there's opportunities for you.
And then you have been a success and leader in both the business and volunteer world, and my question is, what are the qualities that account for successful leadership in business?
Actually, the qualities for successful leadership in business or the community profit sector are the
mm-hmm.
same.
And what are those?
You know, well, there's a variety of them, but if I had to pick just several for the interview here, the first I would say is listening. You have to be a good listener. You have to listen to other people to find out what their needs are, what their story is. I mean, everybody has a story,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so often they don't have an opportunity to tell it. You know, so giving people an opportunity to tell their story, you can learn a lot about somebody and their past and their hopes for the future and how you might be able to help them attain those hopes they have for the future. So listening is one. The other one is you certainly do have to be organized, because if you're involved in the community and involved in business and you have a family, you know, you have to be organized to make sure you have appropriate balance within your life.
Mm-hmm.
Communication skills are obviously important, whether you communicate verbally, non-verbally, written or orally. You know, communication skills are very important in leadership.
Out of those three that you've discussed of the qualities of being a successful leader in the volunteer world and the business world, it seems like you're very passionate about the listening in particular. Is there an instance where you had that opportunity or a story of an interaction with someone where you had to use that sticks out in your mind?
Every day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day and every instance, whether it be in business or whether it be, again, in the volunteer world, specifically with the Red Cross, there are always stories that people have to tell. I mean, recently, after our board retreat, we went out and we're installing smoke detectors in various parts of the community. And as simple as it is, you knock on a door and you talk to somebody about, do they have smoke detectors? And if they don't, could we install them? Or if they do have them, could we check them to make sure that they're working, type of thing? And all of a sudden, they'll start telling a story about their lives. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it was involved Red Cross, where Red Cross had helped them or somebody in their family in the past. They start talking to you sometimes about some of the heartaches that they've had in life. And yet they're so appreciative of Red Cross being there. So, I mean, you get these wonderful stories every time when you're open to listening to somebody's story.
And with the smoke detectors, I think you mentioned that in our pre-interview, your involvement with the smoke detectors. Can you elaborate more on that for the sake of the listeners?
Well, sure. This is a project that I'm sure anyone that you interview is going to be talking about, because mm-hmm. we're very actively involved with it currently. The Indiana Red Cross will pair with different for-profit companies, so they'll become a partner with us. And obviously, we work very closely with the fire department anyway. We always have. Mm-hmm. We're one of the first calls they make when there's a single-family fire, which is a true disaster. And sometimes when people talk about natural disasters, they don't think about single-family fires. But if you've been displaced and you don't have food, shelter, clothing, the fire department calls us. Do we help take care of that? Mm-hmm. But then there's also, obviously, it's a lot of emotional needs, you know, which we have caseworkers and referrals that we can help people with that at the same time. But with this particular project, and I don't have the current stats, but when we started for the last 6 months of last year, which was 2015, by the end of the year, if I have my numbers correct, they could attribute 5 to 7 lives that were actually saved already in those few short months because of smoke detectors that we installed. Mm-hmm. So we're continuing to do that project. It's an exciting one. Our volunteers love it. Our business corporate partners love it. And we know we're saving lives.
And wasn't there a personal story that you remember hearing about a family that ended up being saved by the fire detectors? You get a lot of those stories?
We get a lot of those stories mm-hmm. from that standpoint. And interesting enough, there's a great story, and I'll let her tell it to you at some point in time, but if she so chooses. But she was she worked with our chapter. I believe it was an AmeriCorps volunteer. I'd have to go back and check to be sure. And yet, she was involved in a family fire and actually saved her family. And it's very emotional that she's willing to tell the story, which I think she might be willing to do. But here she is working with the Red Cross, and all of a sudden is a beneficiary of our services, you know, from mm-hmm. getting out of her house and then needing the assistance of food, shelter, and clothing.
Do you have her name?
I'll get it for you.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate it. Let's see here.
I don't want to share it from a confidentiality standpoint. Since we're recording,
and that's your right as the narrator to determine.
Yeah, just
what
for confidentiality, I want to make sure she's comfortable with it, so I'll slip it to you afterwards.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And if you can't, and she's uncomfortable with it, I understand. With your various roles of leadership, specifically in the Red Cross, what would you say is your favorite position you've held?
Well, that's a good question, because I've been fortunate enough to hold a number of positions, mm-hmm. And I've enjoyed them all. I certainly enjoyed the opportunity when I served as chairman of the board. I enjoyed a lot of my direct service. I guess if I have to pick one, it's probably working with the kids. It was probably as chairman of our Youth Leadership Development Center.
And why was that your favorite?
Well, I'm passionate about teaching leadership, value-based leadership to young people, because I think our world is in dire need of great leaders. And I see so much potential in young people, but they need to have the opportunities to learn about value-based leadership and how to put that into action to make a difference in the world. And for 20 years, I'd see these kids come to our camp thinking it was just going to be a fun camp, And we did have fun, but it was a very specific curriculum on leadership. And we taught Red Cross courses, so they got Red Cross skills at the same time. And some of those young people are now older adults. They're still involved with Red Cross. They're doing other things in the community. So watching a young person grow and learn about leadership and learn about service and learn some valuable Red Cross skills during a week period of time, and then to see some of them years later continue to develop those and utilize those and make a difference, that's a true joy.
And that's a, that was actually a helpful response, because the next few questions I have to do with the Youth Leadership Development Committee. You said that you served on the board for 20 years for that committee?
Yeah, it was a committee. It wasn't a board. It was, but yes.
What was the time frame for your serving? I know it was 20 years.
Oh, gosh. That was probably approximately 1977 to 1997, we'll say.
All right. And then for the sake of the listeners, you've kind of touched on this a little bit, but so that they can have some context, can you explain what the Youth Leadership Development Committee is?
Sure. Well.
And would you prefer me calling it a board or a committee?
Committee, but unfortunately, they're not in existence anymore. That program was discontinued because Red Cross nationally has gone through a number of changes over the years, you know, and that was considered, at one point in time, we had must, should, and may services, you know, and that was a may service. And then when budget cuts came, the may services were the ones that were eliminated. We're getting back involved once again more with youth, which I'm very pleased to see on both the international and local level, because youth is so important. I still look around the board table today, and a lot of us are getting gray hair or no hair, and I'm thinking, who's going to take our place someday, you know, if we don't really work with the youth and train the youth and expose them to Red Cross humanitarian values, because there'll be a great demand for volunteers throughout the community private sector in the future. So it's important that we be more involved with youth. But
How does youth leadership development fit with the Red Cross's mission and purpose?
Well, I'll give you my personal opinion, because I'm not sure that's going to be totally consistent with the national organizations.
It's totally fine. I'm interviewing you.
Well, and that's one of the things I love about this chapter always. This is maybe a little off topic. At the same time, I think it's pertinent to your question. We have always been, on the local basis here, good partners with the national organization. Yet at the same time, I'm sure some people at National would think we've been a little bit of a rebel at times, because if we disagree with the national organization, we're willing to stand up and do so. You know, we do it with pure and honest motives and respectfully. As you know, Red Cross is one corporation, you know, chartered by Congress. I mean, each local chapter or area, we have no fiduciary responsibility, zero. And yet, this board has always acted like it had a fiduciary responsibility. So I think that kind of ties into what we're talking about when it comes to leadership.
And you talk about the Indianapolis, Indiana Red Cross chapter being a rebel. Is there a specific instance that sticks in your mind? Being viewed that way?
Well, I just think, because sometimes we're willing to stand up.
Yeah.
You know, and say, we don't agree with this directive from National, and here's why. You know, and I think that's an important thing to do.
Was there a specific instance?
Oh, gosh. There's been a number over the years from that standpoint, but I don't know if we should go into those specifics.
Okay.
But there's been a number. I think it's just more the philosophy, I think, that's important from that standpoint. We are great supporters of the national organization, but we're supporters of the mission. And if we believe that something from National we have a concern about, a question about, we're always willing to state that.
Okay.
I don't know if that answered your question or not.
Oh, I think you answered it fine. Another question I actually have is, what attracted you to youth development work?
I think that's from my days at Sigma Chi as an undergraduate there at Ball State, because I attended a number of value-based leadership opportunities that Sigma Chi offered. And so I became very passionate about that, and that's why I was attracted to the Youth Leadership Development Center at Red Cross, and why I'm still involved with Sigma Chi Leadership Development today.
And then, can you explain your various responsibilities during the time you were with the Youth Leadership Development Committee?
Sure. As chairman of that committee, I would make sure we had diversified, appropriate representation of our community on the committee. We would actually develop the specific curriculum for each of the days that we were up at the camp in Northern Indiana. So we developed the curriculum, and then most of those of us on the committee, along with some other volunteers, were the actual facilitators and presenters at the camp. So we would go up there and spend a whole week actually facilitating discussions and making presentations throughout the week.
Was there a major event you personally led that you remember?
Well, sure. I was in charge of the first day, which the topic was value-based leadership. So I had a presentation that I would give on how to be a leader, and that was the theme of the day, how to be a leader. And then we always had experiential learning opportunities, and so there were activities. So you would teach the concept, and then they would have a chance to go practice that concept and then get feedback from their facilitator, their faculty member, you know, their guide on what they did really well and what they could do even better the next time. And then each of the 5 days we were there at the Leadership Development Center, the next day built upon the next theme, built upon the first day's message.
Cool. That's really interesting. I wish I would have known about that. That sounds really cool, actually. And were there a lot of programs that the Leadership Development Center led? Or was there one main project? Or
oh, no. Every day had a different theme. You know, like I said, the first day was how to be a leader. The second one was interpersonal communication. You know, values clarification was another day, because a lot of young people really haven't thought about what their values are and to clarify those values and then how to put those values in action. So we had those themes, and at the same time in the afternoons, we could be teaching sailing, swimming. We had one course that we always loved called Officer Friendly, because one of our members of our staff was actually a deputy, and nobody knew it. And all of a sudden, he'd come out in his full uniform and really talk with the youth about, you know, how to work with officers and not to be afraid of officers and, you know, that type of thing. So we had just a variety of courses, and we changed them over the years depending on feedback from students. I mean, we had one called Loss and Separation, you know, and it went from everything from if you lost a parent or a sibling to if a boyfriend or girlfriend broke up with you, you know, because that's loss and separation. And sometimes we don't give young people in that age bracket, 13 to 17, credit that they have to deal with all these other issues that perhaps seem more adult-like, but they have to deal with them too. So we had a variety of educational courses, Red Cross life-saving courses, and themes throughout the week.
And then during your time, what was the most valuable lesson you learned while being a part of a program dedicated to helping the youth of Indianapolis?
Say that one again, Abby.
During your time, what was the most valuable lesson you learned while being a part of a program dedicated to helping the youth of Indianapolis or Indiana? And if there's more lesson, like more than one you want to share, go right ahead.
Well, there were a lot of lessons. But I think the overarching lesson would have been every youth has leadership potential. If you give them the tools, they may amaze you with the action they'll take and the desire they have to make a difference in the lives of others.
Sounds like a really great experience. And you may have touched on this, but what was the fondest memory you have had while serving as a chair of this program?
I fondest memory, that's going to be very difficult because there were fond memories every year and most every day of every year that we were up there at the camp. Because you'd always see a breakthrough of a child, you know, a youth that really learned something and was excited about learning and that was excited about going back and put it into action. And we had a variety of students. I mean, we made sure we had some students from the inner city. We had students from rural areas. We actually had a program with the girls' school in Indianapolis, and would take two girls from the girls' school that they selected, you know, that were about ready to complete their time at the girls' school and come. So you would see people that wouldn't have never normally interacted with each other, and to see them really come up with an appreciation and an understanding of people that look different or had different backgrounds and different experiences, and then find out there's a lot of commonalities, you know, and the things that they could do together, and you could learn more from those differences as opposed to just fearing them, you know. So I just, right now I see faces of so many of those kids in my mind, you know, that just brings a smile to my face.
Do you keep in touch with any of them still?
Some of them we still do.
Yeah?
Yeah, so, and it's amazing. I was in the grocery store a couple months ago, when the guy comes up to me and goes, "You were my counselor at camp, do you remember me?" Well, sure I do. You look a little different, you know? But, and it was, the sad part was he said, "I have a son that's about ready to go to camp." It's like, oh, we don't have that program anymore, but we might again soon, and we'll find some other camps for them, you know, if we can.
So, this is a clarification question. I've been doing reading on the Leadership Development Center and found that some states have leadership development camps. Is that one and the same? Because it sounds like what they actually label them leadership development camps. Is that the same thing as the Leadership Development Center program?
You know, I don't know what the other ones do, so I really can't comment. It wouldn't surprise me if it was a similar program. But again, there wasn't a national curriculum, so I think when we go to national conventions, we talk to some of the other youth folks that were doing youth programs. We'd be sharing ideas, we'd be sharing best practices, we'd be sharing curriculums because, you know, everyone was doing things a little bit differently.
Well, and I specifically found this description of the purpose of these camps from the Red Cross website. I'll read some of it to give the listener some background on you as well and ask you a couple questions about it, if that's all right.
Sure.
The Red Cross recognizes that tomorrow's leaders are today's teenagers. That's why it created its Leadership Development Camp, a camp for young people organized and run by young people, all in an effort to empower them and teach them the subtle and not-so-subtle traits of becoming a leader. Is that a lot like what you did?
Very similar.
Very similar. Did Indiana ever have a program like this, or...
Yeah, we just call it the Leadership Development Center, LDC.
All right. And around what year did Indiana stop having this program?
It was probably in the late 1990s.
Okay. I'm trying to get situated here.
No, it's funny. Well, one of the funny things, even though we haven't had the actual program since the late 1990s, the committee, which was also the staff that worked up there, we still get together a couple times a year.
Oh, really?
Sure. Just to socialize and talk about some of the kids and to see if anybody's seen any of the kids and that type of thing for over the years. So, yeah, we're still a close group.
That's great. Yeah. And then at our previous meeting, you explained that the Red Cross of Indianapolis for a time was pulling away from youth outreach programs. So I'm going to ask you a few questions on that, if that's okay. How was the Red Cross moving away from outreach programs? What was the process?
It truly was a change in national leadership and national philosophies and national priorities. We've had some really excellent leaders at the national level over the years, but as most of the time, when you get a new leader, he or she may have their own agenda that still fits within the mission of the Red Cross. So changes are made. I always laugh about, like right now, we've really become a statewide chapter. I forget. I mean, we had 30-something chapters not too long ago within the state. And basically now we have like 5, you know. And people talk about, you know, this big change and difference. Well, back in the 1980s, we had something called division, which was basically statewide kind of chapters. So the old timers, we kind of laugh and say, yeah, this will work because it worked back in the 80s until we changed it. And it's what goes around comes around from that standpoint. And we know it's going to work. It's going to be a great opportunity.
And I'm actually going to ask you a few questions on that, on your opinions about the reorganization and how it used to be later on in the interview. So that's great that you brought that up. So how what had caused them to the Red Cross to move away from these youth outreach programs?
It really was more of a priority on core services, you know, whether it be disaster, health and safety training, preventing disasters. So it was a more focused approach to core services as opposed to ancillary services, and youth was one of those, transportation was one of those, some of those type of programs that were really more individually or locally community needs as opposed to a national need type of thing.
Okay, and transportation was also included in that. Do you still have transportation?
We still do have a form of transportation. It's kind of taken on a different role too in recent years, although there's still some human transportation involved when necessary. Right now the transportation folks are doing a lot more delivering blood, you know, to hospitals and others who need it.
All right, and then let's see what the next topic is.
My goodness, you got a book there.
I know. But don't worry, we will not go over 2 hours, so you're all good. It's actually been going through these questions.
I don't have that much to say for 2 hours.
It's all, and if we get done sooner, that's totally fine. You also explained that while the Red Cross was pulling away from youth outreach, you all are currently in the process of fixing that. What is being done to fix the issue?
We're getting more back involved with more youth activities, going into the schools, doing programs for youth within the schools. It's amazing to me whenever there is a disaster, a national disaster, how many schools will raise money and want to make a difference and send it to another state in the Midwest or to the East Coast or to the West Coast, you know, because they want to make a difference. So it's always fun for some of us as volunteers from the board to go out to the schools, accept the check, accept the money, talk to the kids about where their money's going to go, the difference it's going to make, and a little bit more about the Red Cross. So we're doing more outreach, not just from the fundraising, but other programming for kids these days.
And what is your end goal then? Basically, what's your dream for the future of outreach programs for the youth?
Well, my personal dream for outreach program for the youth is that we continue to develop more and more youth activities, opportunities for involvement within the Red Cross. As I mentioned earlier, you know, I kind of worry about sometimes our gray hair. You know, we're going to need energetic, intelligent, compassionate leaders, and they're going to come from the youth. So as we expose them to the humanitarian values of the Red Cross, they get excited about it. So I want to take advantage of every opportunity that we have, because there are future volunteers, there are future leaders, there are future donors, you know, and some of them are going to be future recipients of our services.
And then what are important lessons the Red Cross can teach the youth of America in general?
That's important to give back. It's important to help people in time of need. It's important to be prepared to try to help prevent disasters. You know, do you have the proper supplies in case there's a tornado or hurricane, or depending on what part of the country that you're in? Do you know how to swim? Do you know CPR? If your mom and dad keeled over, could you give them CPR until the EMTs got there? So there's so many opportunities that we can provide young people.
And why is it important to you to have a youth development outreach program through the Red Cross?
Because they are the future. They're the future leaders of the Red Cross, the future leaders of the community profit sector. They're going to be the future corporate leaders, you know, and I want their corporations to become a partner with Red Cross or another organization that they so choose, you know, to, they're going to be our future donors, you know, and let's face it, the Red Cross is no different than anybody else in the community profit sector. You know, we're dependent on donors. And people want to know where their money's going. They want to designate their money to where they're having impact.
Mm-hmm.
And if when we show the youth the impact that we have as Red Cross and the impact they can help us make, that's going to be important when they're making decisions as donors and also where they're going to spend their volunteer time as adults or older adults.
All right, and then I'm going to move on to another section of questions. I actually found this article dated March 28, 2002, so a little while ago, titled Former WIBC News Director Among Those Honored by Red Cross. Does that article sound familiar to you?
Sure, Fred Heckman.
Yeah.
I loved Fred.
I'm going to read a part of the article for background, and I'll ask you a couple questions.
Sure.
Former WIBC News Director Fred Heckman was also honored. Heckman, who was the voice of the awards for over 40 years, devoted a lot of time to the Red Cross. In honor of Heckman, who died last May, Red Cross board member Richard Hester announced the establishment of the Fred Heckman Humanitarian Award. The award will be given annually by the Red Cross to a community member who exemplifies the ideals of the worldwide Red Cross movement by engaging in service to others, promoting understanding among all people, and reaching out to those in need. So why did the Board of American Red Cross of Indiana elect to name this award in honor of Mr. Heckman?
Oh, Fred was such a wonderful human being.
Mm-hmm.
It was very active and well-known in our community, obviously, from his radio show. But he was one that put his own personal values into action. And we were so fortunate at Red Cross that he chose Red Cross for a lot of that action that he took.
Mm-hmm.
Fred would do anything basically that Red Cross needed or asked for, you know, and he would do it really without recognition, didn't really care about the recognition. You know, he was a gregarious and outgoing and wonderful yet very humble man.
Mm-hmm.
So he really exemplified the values that we profess through the Red Cross, and that was about the only way we could come up with try to honor him, his memory, and thank him for his ongoing impact. And when somebody like Fred Heckman leaves this world for the next, their impact is still here. You know, Hugh Baker was another one I mentioned earlier who just left this world for the next, whose impact is still here because they touch so many people who then in turn touch other people, who then touch other people. And, you know, 100 years from now, people may not know the name of Fred Heckman or Hugh Baker or some of these guys, but they still had an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people that they touched that passed it on. So, you just make me smile thinking about Fred.
What were some of his accomplishments to have this kind of honor bestowed? Can you give me an example?
Well, he served on our board in a leadership capacity, but he was truly like the voice of the Red Cross.
Mm-hmm.
We would have an annual banquet, sometimes a banquet, sometimes a luncheon, different venues. But we would honor local heroes,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Fred would be on the committee that helped select the local heroes and helped write the bios and actually delivered it in this wonderful event that we had. And these would be people like you and me
mm-hmm.
that, you know, maybe saw a traffic accident and stopped and pulled somebody to safety out of the car. It would be somebody like you or me that maybe saw a child fall in a retention pond and go in and get them. It might be a local firefighter or a member of the Metropolitan Police Department who went above and beyond the call of duty to save a life. So, I mean, truly, you go to this event and you hear these stories, and there wasn't a dry eye in the house. I mean, I would look at people at my table and say, if you don't have a Kleenex, I'll go get you some. Because, I may not even heard the stories that were coming up that year. I said, but trust me,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're talking about people who are willing to risk their lives to save somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and like I said, they could be lay people like you and me, or people in the fire department, or police department who went beyond the call of duty. You know, so Fred was so involved in selecting the recipients, writing up the narratives and delivering it in just the most passionate and compassionate way both.
What were some lessons you learned from him?
Oh, from Fred, he's one of the people that I learned that you can make a difference, and every individual can make a difference. And it may seem small or insignificant to you, but it's not small or insignificant to somebody else.
And do you have a fond memory? Like, what's your fondest memory with interactions with him?
I never had an interaction with Fred that wasn't fond or memorable. Because he was just that kind of personality. Mm-hmm. You know, he was so friendly and so outgoing and so caring about other people that there's no one that knew him that you wouldn't mention the name and they wouldn't smile and just have wonderful, warm feelings about interactions with him, because they were always genuine, they were always caring, they were always memorable.
Well, then I'm going to transition a little bit and talk about you serving on the board of directors for the American Red Cross. For the sake of whoever's listening to this interview, can you please provide a context of the years you have served?
Well, I've been on the board forever. As I mentioned before, I was first brought on kind of as a youth mm-hmm. member of the board, because I was right out of college. I'll never forget Katie Huell. Katie Huell, what a wonderful, wonderful Red Cross volunteer. She's in the heavens above now, mm-hmm. but I want to say, and I may be wrong, but I'm going to be close. They had to develop a 75 or 80 year volunteer pin for her, because that's how long she was a volunteer.
Oh, wow.
That's how long she was a volunteer. I remember when she was in assisted living, and I went over to visit her. It's when we just talked about moving the building to where we are today, that we just dedicated recently mm-hmm. on Meridian Street. And there were some people that didn't want to move, not move. And Katie's like, oh, we're going home. So what do you mean? She goes, well, when I went to interview for the Red Cross to be a volunteer during the war, it was on Meridian Street.
Oh, wow.
70, 80 years ago. So we're coming home. Oh. So I'm back at the board meeting going, we're going home. Katie says we're going home. But I do remember, as I came in there as kind of the young guy to the board, Katie put her arm around me and she said, young man, you speak up. We need to hear what you have to say. And I thought, wow, here's this older woman who's been a volunteer forever, who's articulate and passionate about the Red Cross, and she's giving me confidence and encouragement that we want to hear the young voice,
mm-hmm.
you know, from that standpoint. So, and now I'm a life member of the board. I've never left the board.
So you're currently a life member of the board.
Yeah, yeah, I've never left the board. So I'm currently, they made me a life member of the board, which I think just means I'm getting old.
It shows you're dedicated. Why did you accept a position on the board of directors for the American Red Cross of Indiana?
Well, back then, I was excited when they approached me and they said, you know, we want a young person's voice on the board. And I just became involved with the Youth Leadership Development Center.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they valued a younger person on the board, I said, sure, I'd be happy to participate and to serve on the board. I never dreamed that I would eventually become chairman of the board, or that I would still be on the board and be a life member today. But, you know, that's one thing about Red Cross. They get their hooks into you. And you look and you can't not love our mission and what we do. You know, so I'm just one of many
mm-hmm.
who are lifers, and it may not be a life board member, but a lifer as a volunteer,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's just the way Red Cross is.
And then what were some key issues that came before the board while you served?
Well, there's been a lot of issues over the years,
mm-hmm.
obviously. Some of them have been, again, changes from the national organization,
mm-hmm.
Different strategic plans under different leaders. Things we should emphasize, things that we shouldn't. One of the issues that our board felt very strongly about is there was a movement to really as I alluded to earlier, focus on just some core services, disaster and health and safety in particular. Mm-hmm. And a lot of us felt, well, we certainly do want to focus on those, but the local communities still have to have some autonomy, because there may be a need in Indianapolis, Evansville, Fort Wayne, Wausau, who knows, that nobody else can fill, and we might be able to fill that. Mm-hmm. And we always believe strongly in that community partnership, that we can do more than just those core services if there's a need in that community. And people look to Red Cross for help. So if we can provide those local services, but I still say may not be a core service, but they're ancillary, you know, because if that's a need in the community and helping somebody, it is a disaster in their lives or something that we can contribute to. And the other thing is, that's just a positive image for Red Cross. Mm-hmm. When there's a need in the community, who do you go to first? Okay, if they say Red Cross, awesome. How can we mobilize our volunteer force? Those are our future donors. Those are our future volunteers. So that's why, that's one of the issues that has been a hot topic on and off over the years. Mm-hmm. And will probably continue to be for the next 100 years.
It's not a real organization unless there's always that, like, debate going on, you know.
Well, I've always said if two people always agree, one of them isn't necessary.
Mm-hmm. When we think of philanthropy, we often think in terms of people donating their time and talent and money. Mm-hmm. You have a long and significant record of contributing your time and talent. And my question is, why were you willing to donate your time to the Red Cross for such an extended period?
It truly goes back to the mission. Mm-hmm. It's mission-driven. I believe in the mission of what we do. And the other thing is, Red Cross is fun. I mean, my fellow board members, the other volunteers that I work with, the staff that we've had over the years, we do great work, and we have fun doing it. So it's the mission, and it's the relationships, and that's what drives me, and I think most people, to give time and money to the Red Cross.
Mm-hmm. And then what talents did you bring to your voluntary activity with the Red Cross?
You should probably ask my colleagues what talents that I brought to the Red Cross. I certainly can tell you I know I brought passion and compassion. Hopefully I brought leadership. Hopefully I brought contacts and networking to spread the good word of the Red Cross. But others probably are better to determine what I may have brought or did bring to the table.
And then you've also have a record of contributing your money along with time and talent. Mm-hmm. You're a donor. Why did you elect to make the Red Cross a recipient of your monetary donations?
Well, you know, if you believe in the mission, you've got to put your money where your mouth is. Mm-hmm. And I don't care if you give $10 or $10 million, if you give what you can, I think that's important. And I know that my dollars that go to the Red Cross as well as to the United Way, there's community impact, and that's what you want your dollars to do.
And when did you first start donating to the Red Cross?
You know, back literally right after college.
Wow.
You know, again, I think if you volunteer, mm-hmm. and back then I was probably given $10, and that was probably a stretch, even at that point in time.
It shows you're dedicated.
You know, but that's what's important, is that you give what you can to what you believe in.
So oftentimes, membership on the board of directors of a nonprofit carries with it the expectation of monetary donations. Was that your experience with the Red Cross?
Not initially. It wasn't, but it certainly is now, mm-hmm. as it should be. Again, I go back to any board that anybody serves on. If the board's not committed and the board doesn't believe that their dollars are being well spent and going to have community impact, then why should anybody else give? Mm-hmm. So the board has to be 100% committed.
Setting the example.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I looked at an organization and half the board members gave, why would I give? I mean, do they not believe in the mission? Do they not believe mm-hmm. the board stewards of the funds? Mm-hmm. So do they not feel the funds are being spent appropriately? Are they not good stewards? I mean, what's going on? So that's why it's everybody's expected to donate at whatever level that they can.
Well then, and given all the worthy charities competing for dollars, why have you continued to support the Red Cross monetarily over the years?
Well, Red Cross isn't the only organization that my wife and I support.
Okay.
You know, I want to be clear that I love the Red Cross, and I continue to support it and always will.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually in our will from that standpoint, so mm-hmm. we can support it after we're gone. But that's because I do believe that we're good. The Red Cross, locally for sure here in Indiana, are good stewards of the funds. They make sure that they're used to really help people in need or to prevent disasters. And I know that that's not only historically been the case with this chapter, but it will be that way in the future. I know that because we have strong leadership. Red Cross is one of the few organizations that I know that can tell you who the next three chairmen of the board are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have strong leadership, we're focused on leadership, and we know where we're going to the future. So that's one reason Red Cross is something I will continue to support. My wife and I have put in our estate planning. Again, there's other wonderful organizations that Red Cross is associated with in other ways, like
mm-hmm.
United Way of Central Indiana, that we also have in our estate planning. There's also some other ones that we're passionate about. My wife is so passionate about Big Brothers Big Sisters. I mean, that's another
mm-hmm.
organization that they were very intent on making sure that we can help continue their mission and work after we're gone.
Right. So now we're going to transition to a different topic, and that's going to be on the reorganization of the Red Cross. Are you aware of
which one?
Senator Grassley.
Which reorganization?
The Senator Grassley one this past handful of years. And I'm going to read you contextual overview to give you context as well as the listeners. And if you don't want to answer any of these questions, that's...
We'll give it a shot. Like I said, we've reorganized a lot of times over the last 40 years I've been a volunteer, so...
So I'll go ahead and read this little snippet I have right here. So at this time, I would like to give the listener a contextual overview of the events which occurred following the attacks of September 11, 2001, and the devastation and flooding of Hurricane Katrina in August 2005. At the national level, many nonprofit organizations, including the American Red Cross, fell under investigation led by Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley and the United States Senate Committee on Finance. In the case of the Red Cross, the criticism ultimately led to the passage of the American National Red Cross Governance Modernization Act of 2007. The American Red Cross Board of Governors, in compliance with this act, embarked upon massive reforms as dictated in October 2006, report entitled American Red Cross Governance for the 21st Century. In regards to this Governance Modernization Act, can you explain what promoted Senator Grassley and his committee to investigate the Red Cross? Do you have any background information on that?
I don't have any specific background that I can recall about what caused that. I can tell you whenever there's something as major as a 9/11, which let's hope we never have to go through
mm-hmm.
again, or hurricane, which we know we will go through again.
Mm-hmm.
Large humanitarian organizations like the Red Cross always come under scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
We're making appeals for money, and we're doing our best to get there and serve the people that are in need.
Mm-hmm.
Reality is, when you get there, you're still going to see people, and you mobilize as many volunteers as you can, mobilize financial resources as you can. But the media is still going to find somebody that didn't get served.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're going to find somebody that, you know, was disgruntled with the service that they received. And I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's reality. Yet, I do know I have complete faith that the American Red Cross does the absolute best that they can with the financial resources they have and the volunteer resources that they can muster in those type of disasters. Is it ever going to be perfect? It's probably not going to be. Is it a good thing to go under review on a regular basis of your policies and procedures and figure out what you did well and what you can do better the next time? Absolutely it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that should be done not only at the national level, but at the local levels on a regular basis.
And then on February 27, 2006, during the course of the investigation of the Red Cross by the Senate Committee on Finance, Senator Grassley wrote to Ms. Bonnie McLeven Hunter, Chairman, Board of Governors, American Red Cross. Grassley summarized his concerns. I would like to mention some of those concerns, provide some quotations from him, and have you respond. Reading from Grassley's letter of February 27, 2006, under the category of independence, the senator made the following observation, quote, "An issue for organizations such as the Red Cross, United Way, YMCA, and others is ensuring the proper balance between the field and headquarters. There have unfortunately been very real problems at the chapter level of the Red Cross. To be effective, the Red Cross must vigorously oversee chapters and discipline chapters, as well as ensure the national standards are in place and met by the chapters. I have concerns that this is not happening to the degree it should because the chapter's involvement in governance. I understand that a majority of the national board is compromised of representatives from the chapters." Based on your direct experience, how would you assess Senator Grassley's observations on the Red Cross chapters being involved in leadership?
You know, back in that time, I think he was probably right. We had thousands and thousands of local chapters in large cities and small towns, and there was inconsistencies in service. There was inconsistencies, even the amounts that of money that were could be given to someone in need, like at a single family fire, for example. So I think that was an fair assessment.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things with the current reorganization led by Gail McGovern, our current national CEO and the current National Board of Governors, has really addressed so many of those issues. So I mentioned we're down to like five chapters right now in the state of Indiana. We're more of a state chapter now.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more of a consistency of service being given. There's more consistency of relief that's being distributed. So I would say that was a fair assessment. In this process, we've probably lost some volunteers and some PR, because
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're in a small rural community and you you had a Red Cross chapter and it might have been in the basement of a church,
mm-hmm.
and it's no longer there, well, there's not that presence per se in the community,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm sure that has caused some heartache for some folks. But we're working really hard with this new reorganization now to make sure that we have that consistency, but we still have that presence every
mm-hmm.
place. We have a new position. I want to say it's county coordinator, something along those lines. So in every county, even though we only have five chapters within the state, there will be a Red Cross presence, a volunteer coordinator in every county to, again, have that local presence and let everyone know that chapter house, that chapter sign that was there years ago isn't there anymore, but the Red Cross is still here,
mm-hmm.
and you're actually going to get as good, if not better, service and consistent service than what you had in the past.
And is that the process of essentially placing Red Cross representatives in each county, is that already implemented?
We're in the process of doing it right now.
Okay.
We're just now forming a statewide oversight board,
mm-hmm.
which is basically going to be made up of the chairman of the five chapters, their chairman of the boards, some representatives at large, some people that represent the blood,
mm-hmm.
since we're now doing blood in the state of Indiana, which we didn't do consistently in the past, to share best practices and to make sure there's consistency and delivery throughout the state. And that's just our region. I'm sure the other regions are doing the same.
Hmm. Okay. All right. So at our pre-interview, and you kind of mentioned this earlier in the interview, you explained how the reorganization of the Red Cross has recently undergone is the same as 30 years ago, and that what goes around comes around. My question is, how is this recent reorganization similar to how the Red Cross operated 30-some years ago?
Well, it's similar from the standpoint when we had what was called division.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a statewide organization for the most part,
mm-hmm.
which is what we're getting back to today. The difference is today there will be more consistency of delivery because there are fewer specific chapters, as I was just mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
30 years ago, when we had the vision and was doing statewide, there were still, I can't even tell you how many chapters there were at that time. it wouldn't have been surprised me if there were 90. I mean, there were just so many small chapters. So mm-hmm. we've taken the best of the 30 years ago from the state standpoint and then improved it by having fewer chapters, more county representation to deliver consistency of services.
Mm-hmm. And then would you have done anything differently for this reorganization?
Good question. At this point, I would say not. Mm-hmm. But since it's still evolving, ask me 6 months, a year from now, I may have a different answer.
Okay.
But that's one of the good things. Mm-hmm. It is evolving. And one of the things that I will say about the national organization at this point in time is I feel that Gail and some of her staff in Washington, D.C., and the regional staff, like Sue Richter, mm-hmm. that works with us, is truly listening more to the local board members and local volunteers as they kind of put together mm-hmm. This new reorganization. And I think that's a very positive approach that needs to continue. But as it evolves, we're still going to have to make some tweaks and changes, and mm-hmm. Again, that's a good thing. We ought to always be doing that.
Mm-hmm. So then the Red Cross actually outlined its proposed reorganization in a document entitled American Red Cross Governance for the 21st Century, mm-hmm. Dated October 2006. How was the American Red Cross restructured? And I know you've touched on this a little bit with the representation in the different counties, but was there any other restructuring that went on?
Yeah, I think that from the national level, I'm probably not as well versed as to speak of the national mm-hmm. level. I know they did a lot of restructuring at national from the lines of service standpoint. I mean, some of the things that we used to do locally are now handled on a national basis. Mm-hmm. For example, if you wanted to have a CPR class or first aid class, you know, you could call the local chapter and we'd schedule it and we'd get the volunteers lined up, they've been trained to go out and do that. Mm-hmm. That's different now. That, you know, goes through a national scheduling. Same with our service to armed forces, used to be service to military families, same thing. There's more consistency now because there's 1-800 number and you get the same answer and you get the same mm-hmm. kind of service, as opposed to you'd call your local chapter, you know, and some were better than others at providing those services. So that was some of the major changes that started, you know, back within the last 8-10 years.
And then what do you believe was gained from this reorganization?
Well, I think what was gained from then and what we're continuing to gain as we go forward is really the consistency mm-hmm. of service delivery and the consistency of utilization of financial resources.
Do you believe anything was lost in the process?
Yes, I mean, certainly there's going to be some things lost. You mm-hmm. you lose a little of that local autonomy, you know, that's important to, I don't care how big your chapter was, whether it was a large one like in Indianapolis or a small one in a rural part of the state of Indiana. You feel like there's some local autonomy that may be lost. You feel like you're asked to focus more on fundraising than you're asked to focus on service delivery. Mm-hmm. So there's some things that were certainly lost, but I think that's been acknowledged, and that's part of this evolution as we're moving forward to regain that.
And then during all these stuff going on with the reorganization in 2006 and 2007, what was the nature of your involvement with the Red Cross during that time?
I was still on the board.
Still on the board.
Still on the board. So I've been involved with that leadership aspect mm-hmm. Of how we could implement it locally and what we agreed with and what kind of feedback that we gave back to the national organization that perhaps things should be reconsidered.
And then what was your reaction to these changes?
My reaction was overall they were positive. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I did see the lack of local autonomy, mm-hmm. which I feared in the long run could hurt from a fundraising standpoint. And again, I think those are being issues are being addressed.
And then you have a unique perspective of the behind-the-scenes operations of one of the nation's largest and most recognized humanitarian organizations. If you could change one thing about the way the Red Cross manages its volunteers, workers, or missions, what would it be?
Hmm. Well, certainly, if I could change one thing, well, I think it would actually go back to starting to with the recruitment of volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
I would have a probably more defined recruiting plan to recruit volunteers
mm-hmm.
for specific reasons. To make sure they got the specific training, and then to make sure they had opportunities to utilize that training. And then I would make sure, and we, you know, there's a lot of volunteers, they don't need recognition, they don't do it for recognition. But at the same time, I think it's important that they receive their recognition
mm-hmm.
For what they're doing. So I guess I would change that. I would have more targeted recruiting. I would make sure that they're utilized appropriately and recognized even more than they are, and even those that don't really want it or need it.
All right, and then we're at 1 hour and 26 minutes right now for the interview time, so we're going to go ahead and wrap up the session by me asking some final questions, kind of to get you to reflect a little bit about your life and involvement with the Red Cross.
Okay.
How was the Red Cross volunteer program, or how has it changed during the years you have volunteered for the Red Cross?
Well, it's changed a lot in 40 years,
mm-hmm.
I can tell you that. And we talked a little bit about the various restructurings from out of national and how it's affected the local. So there has been a lot of changes. But the most important thing is what hasn't changed, as opposed to what has changed. The most important thing is that hasn't changed is we're still focused on mission. We're still focused on serving people in times of disaster, helping people prevent disasters, and trying to have impact in our community in a variety of ways. So although there's been a lot of changes in how we deliver services and how we're structured,
mm-hmm.
none of that's as important as what hasn't changed, and that's the focus on the people that we serve and making a difference in their lives.
And then it looks like your career followed two intertwined tracks, business and volunteer work. Why did you continue to volunteer, seeing as business must have kept you plenty busy? Yeah. Stuttering over.
No. You're doing a great job. For goodness gracious, I'm exhausted after an hour and a half, and you're the one that's focusing. I'm just kind of talking, and you're looking ahead and trying to piece things together and follow-up questions, and did he really answer what I just asked? I mean, you're doing all the work, so you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Repeat that one again, so I want to make
sure.
Yeah,
no problem.
I want to be sure that I answer.
No problem. It looks like your career followed two intertwined tracks,
yeah.
Business and volunteer work. Business must have kept you plenty busy, so my question is why did you continue to volunteer?
Yeah, that's what I remember you asking.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine not.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's really more of my being, my character, who I am. I can't imagine just doing all business.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that goes back to my upbringing, one of the first questions with my parents. Maybe it just goes to my personal belief structure. Everybody needs balance in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes my work with the Red Cross or United Way or other community profit organizations is like a constructive diversion in my life. You know, work is work, and you can enjoy it. You can have good days and bad days. And although there's challenges in the community profit world,
mm-hmm.
particularly at a board level when you're having to make some tough decisions, it's still constructive diversion. It allows you to have self-worth and knowing that, you know, you're leaving some kind of legacy, you know, and you're helping somebody else. So I just can't imagine not having work at the Red Cross or the community profit sector combined with my business life.
And what kind of legacy do you hope to leave behind?
You know, that's always a good question. Because I think everybody has a legacy.
Mm-hmm.
You're developing it every day by the actions that you take and the decisions that you make. So if you're taking positive actions to helping others and making good decisions, you're going to have a good legacy. And somebody else really determines your legacy is what they say, because if somebody writes about it. But I think you determine your own legacy just by the actions you take and the decisions you make. And I just want mine to be a one that, you know,
mm-hmm.
he had balanced his life, he made a difference in the lives of others, he didn't waste his life, you know, and kind of want to be one of those guys that 100 years from now nobody knows my name, but maybe they were better off because I lived.
That's very insightful. I mean, that's definitely something that I think everyone should live by. But do you believe that your success in business led also to a desire of you wanting to give back?
Oh, sure. When you're successful in business, you know, and actually, to be honest, my business has probably benefited from my community involvement. If I think back, I mean, I've had a number of clients that really came from Red Cross or United Way, you know, and it wasn't intentional from that standpoint, but you get to know people.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to trust people, and sometimes then you do business together, even though you're working together and volunteering in the community.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, every corporation is supposed to have a set of values, and if you live those values, they have to be consistent with some organization within the community profit world.
Mm-hmm.
So, why wouldn't you marry the two? I mean, it's almost hypocritical and inconsistent if you don't.
I mean, that
my opinion.
Makes sense. And by this winter, you would have been a volunteer, I believe you said, for 40 years.
40 years.
that's quite dedication.
I did start young.
Yeah, you did.
Seems wild.
But that's awesome. What are some lessons you've learned during your time with the Red Cross? I know you touched on this a little bit throughout the interview,
mm-hmm.
but just in a reflective kind of question, what do you think are some lessons you learned?
Well, one, that the Red Cross is worth it.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Cross is worth your time. It's worth your money. It does have great impact. Two, you can have fun while doing good work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can develop strong personal relationships that you would never have dreamed of or never had the opportunity to with fellow volunteers and members of the professional paid staff. So saying all that, the bottom line is you can make a difference by being involved with the Red Cross, and it will also make a difference in you.
And then what have you learned about volunteerism?
I think it's an individual responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
I think everyone should volunteer in some capacity for some organization that they are passionate about. I think it should start at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
I think we should value our youth more than we do. They have more to contribute than what people believe at times. So I believe it's a civic duty, and I also think it's just damn fun. And I do think you get self-worth from it. It
mm-hmm.
goes back to that selfish volunteerism I talked about earlier, which I'm okay with.
And then with nearly 40 years of volunteering with the Red Cross, what would you say were your major accomplishments?
Well, first of all, let's be honest. When it comes to Red Cross,
mm-hmm.
I don't know that any of us have a lot of individual accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
We may have had individual opportunities or individual offices or those type of things, but our accomplishments, our success, are collective. You know, we work together. and I'm talking about the other volunteers, but I'm talking about particularly the relationship between the volunteers and our professional paid staff. It is truly a team effort, kind of unique that I've seen in the community profit world, of how our volunteers and staff work together. But all of our accomplishments really are much more collective than they are individual.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of what I think makes it fun and makes it more impactful.
And then you're currently the senior partner with Indiana Business Advisors.
Mm-hmm.
Have your skills in your professional line of work impacted your accomplishments as a volunteer and donor with the Red Cross?
Well, you know, it's kind of like when we talked about earlier about
mm-hmm.
the youth. I mean, I really think the skills that you use in your work or your for-profit life, the skills that you utilize in your family life, are the same skills that you utilize in the community profit world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it comes down to your skills and your values. You know, if you have the right values and you're willing to put those into action, that's transcends every aspect of one's life. I do think one of the most important things is leadership. I can tell you when I've seen organizations, particularly in the community profit world, that have struggled, it's always, both 99.9% of the time, it's a leadership issue. And it could be a leadership issue with the volunteer board, with the professional paid staff, or with both.
Mm-hmm.
But I just really do believe that the values that you have and profess, if you put those into action, if you're willing to take a risk, to have courage to do the right thing for the right reason at the right time, and to be a leader, that's what you're supposed to do in every aspect of your life. And it certainly is important in the community profit world and within Red Cross in particular.
So if you had to talk to somebody, if you could tell somebody one thing or a few things about the Red Cross 100 years from now, since this is an interview and be recorded, what would you want that person to know about the Red Cross?
100 years from now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would say you're about to embark on the 200th running of the Indianapolis 500, which is an exciting time in Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say to them, I have no idea what your structure looks like. I have no idea if you still have chapters, if you have board of directors, what the paid staff looks like. I'm sure it's different than it was 50 years ago, and maybe similar to what it was 100 years ago, since things
mm-hmm.
come around. But the one thing I can tell you that's not different is the mission of the Red Cross, the movement of the Red Cross, and how you're serving others.
Mm-hmm.
It may look a little bit different on how you're serving others, how you're helping to prevent disasters and respond in time of need. But 100 years ago, we were doing that same thing. You may be doing it differently, but I know you're still doing it.
Well, I just have two final questions before we wrap up the interview. One is there anything I did not ask you that I should have?
Abby. You asked me more than I thought you were going to, so I'm about brain dead anyway, so no.
Is there anything you would like to talk about that you did not get a chance to talk about?
No, I really don't think so. I'm very proud to be a Red Cross volunteer. I'm proud to be active in this community. I'm proud that this particular board acts in a fiduciary capacity, even though it doesn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
Responsibility. I'm very proud of the unique relationship that we've had over the years between the volunteers and professionals, paid staff, and the teamwork that we have for community impact. So I want to thank you for your professionalism and the way you conducted yourself and the questions that you asked that were thought-provoking. Don't know if this will ever go any further than this room. But if it does, I hope it's beneficial to somebody in the future.
No, I'm sure it will be. And I just want to thank you on behalf of the American Red Cross, Dr. Scarpino, and myself for assisting us with this oral history project. It was a great pleasure interviewing you. I enjoyed it. And I want to thank you for contributing your time for this project, and thank you for your years of service with the Red Cross.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. Good luck in the rest of this project. I'll be anxious to hear when you complete the project, how it came out and what you're going to do with it.
Oh, well, we can keep in touch with that then.
I would love that.
Yeah. And then I'm just going to go ahead and turn off the recorders now. All right. Let's make sure I do this right. Yay.
It was on, right?
Turn off. Yes.
Just checking.